Dr. Brown, how have you been, sir?
Real good. Glad to be here.
You know, Terry, a lot of people have had their lives changed, whether it's work. You know, we've seen this anecdotally and in some cases increase in phone calls when it comes to suicides, drug abuse, things along that line. If that's going on, it's not too much of a stretch to think that maybe some people are having problems sleeping. Have you seen that in your office?
Yeah, we do have a lot of people, you know, with the COVID anxiety sort of interfering with sleep. Usually anxiety causes, you know, will tend to affect difficulty getting to sleep more than they will waking up a lot during the night. So it's kind of an initial insomnia type thing. But some people can wake in the early morning, you know, when they've replenish themselves partially with their sleep, and they can wake up early, you know, worried about these issues.
Well, if it's initial sleep, you know, you've taught me a couple of things. I call them Dr. Brown's sleep hygiene. You know, that there are some ideas when it comes to getting to sleep to kind of reinitializing that process in the evening that you've used with your patients.
That's true. I mean, you know, the behavioral treatments predominate, and that's kind of what comes to mind when you mention that is the stimulus control method, you know, where if you're kind of lying there and you can't sleep very well and you try to get up and do something not too interesting but not too boring, and then if you start yawning, then you go back and try to go back to bed and see if that, you know, helps. And there's other behavioral techniques too, but the behavioral techniques as a rule have actually kind of become the standard of care. They have all these research studies, and the American Academy of Sleep Medicine supports behavioral therapy as the first therapy. But there's a disconnect there because the public and the doctors don't really know that.
You know, it's interesting, this behavioral aspect, Dr. Brown, because I mentioned you were coming on today, and I started talking about my brother, who will not travel anywhere without the box fan and his own pillow, right? That these habits that you talk about are actually kind of personal. We don't really talk about them, but the minute I mentioned this on the air yesterday, everybody came and had a story about the thing they have to have to go to sleep. It's kind of interesting, behavior and the introduction of a good night's sleep, how tightly those are tied together, your ritual.
That's right. They're sort of like the controlling stimulus, basically, for those. And it's kind of like you know, have you ever gone out of town, you know, and forgot to, even though you brought your whatever kind of pills with you, you forgot to take one, you know, like for blood pressure or whatever. And the reason you forgot to take it is because you were in a different environment that didn't stimulate the memory to take the pill.
Right. And, so, you know, the sleeping. And if I remember right, I was at your office. It was the grand opening, a new location on 13. And we were, I'm not sure how we got to the subject, and you said, look at this. This is my closet of pillows. The people brought their own pillows because they had to have them, and sometimes they forgot them because they had to have them. And, you know, I find this also interesting because people say this, I have to have the TV on. And I've been using the sound effects of rain in the background, which I found very helpful. There's there's an audio background for this too.
Right. I mean, and it does look like there's a subgroup, and I find this kind of interesting, a subgroup of chronic insomniacs that seem to have better than average hearing. That's simply an observation that I've made. I can't find anything in the literature on that, but it does become a problem. And so some sort of white noise generator, some people say, well, they have to have the fan, you know, no matter how cold it is in the house. And there's other, you can buy these little devices that not only give you something like you're talking about, like the rain, but you can get some that, you know, just give you that white noise kind of sound.
And by the way, I can tell you anecdotally, the highlighted ability to hear through walls, that's what I call it in my house. I can hear through walls, and I usually follow that phrase with what new fresh hell has my neighbor come up with, right? And but because when you said that, I'm like, I know that feeling, especially if I'm on the road in a hotel. I mean, my I'm hypersensitive, you know, to changes to begin with. And I'm like, any type of noise. And I always wondered whether I was using that as an excuse so I could blame my lack of sleep on someone else.
I don't know. You might really be sensitive. You know, I had a lady one time that when they delivered the paper to her house early in the morning, that was enough to wake her up. She said her husband totally slept through it. So she ended up having to unsubscribe to the paper as her best treatment.
Right. Okay, let's talk about this, because Dr. Brown's sleep hygiene, the initial sleep, which you're saying getting to sleep, but we're good about staying asleep once we get there in kind of this COVID effect, we'll call it, a pandemic fatigue.
Yeah, with right? an anxiety thing. Whereas, you know, depression tends to produce waking throughout the night as well.
No more than I had mentioned that you were coming on and said, if you got a question for Dr. Brown, and here comes one and says, I just drink a lot and I sleep like a baby. You know, that may have some initial benefits when it comes to initially, but it also is not the right kind of sleep. And as a rule, when you sober up, you wake back up.
That's right. You're quite alert. And sometimes that's in the middle of the night. And then alcohol does suppress slow wave or deep sleep. And that's not good.
When it comes to our children and changing schedules, there's another issue here with kids, too.
Yeah, well, I get, you know, there's always the summer issue, and then I don't know how this, you know, usually kids adjust in a few weeks to going to bed earlier and getting up earlier. But I don't know with this hybrid type thing, you know, and, you know, I don't know if they're sleeping late some days, and, you know, that could actually mess up their schedule even more. So it's very important that the kids, you know, go to bed at the same time and get up at the same time. Really, we let that go in the summer generally, but it's probably important to condition that behavior all year round.
And we've got another issue, too. With hybrid classes or online remote learning. And it's interesting because Dr. Brown told me about this years ago, and that is monitors and the wavelength of light that they're emitted. I was not surprised after talking to you and over the years over this subject. We've revisited on a number of occasions about being subjected to the number of daylight hours and things like that and the light that comes from monitors to see when I bought a new tablet recently, there was a blue light filter, and you know why it's there.
Right, because it does appear that blue-green sort of spectrum does tend to stimulate us and keep us awake. And some people have, if electronic products don't catch up, people in the short run have been using these amber-colored glasses, which would filter out that blue-green kind of color that seems to keep us awake at night.
I'm curious, you know, since we've gone to so many LED lights, is there an effect in LED lights that, since their prevalence now, that may be affecting people's sleep?
I don't think so. They're usually, even though they're brighter than regular lights, they're usually not quite bright enough to reset our circadian clock, basically.
When it comes to people's cycles, sleep cycles, I mean, the importance of a good night's sleep, it's like using the restroom. I mean, we don't really talk about it. Something's personal. We do this off to the side, but it's also one of the most important things we do when it comes to our health, our mental well-being for children during their growth cycles. Have we become a little more wise when it comes to managing ourselves, or at least people who are having problems a little more likely to come and see you about help?
Well, I do think people are more likely to come see us about help, yeah, particularly if they have chronic insomnia. And we tend to get the type of patients who've already tried various medications and they've failed to one degree or another. And so then we're kind of left with behavioral treatments, and then there's the EB device. The EB device is a device that you wear on your forehead that cools your forehead, and they had looked at functional MRIs, which show blood flow to different parts of the brain in chronic insomniacs, and they found out that people with chronic insomnia, as opposed to a control group without it, had increased blood flow to the frontal cortex.
Do you think that's why people are drawn to fans then?
I think it sort of fits in with that not being able to stop your thought sensation, you know, that a lot of chronic insomniacs get. And then the device actually decreases blood flow, they found out in further studies.
It's interesting, so, Dr. Brown, you may not remember this, and this happened years ago, state of Illinois, where a young boy fell through ice in a lake and was there for like 45 minutes or an hour. and he recovered almost fully. And when they did the research on this, finally, they defined a about a triangle patch between the nose bridge and above the eyebrows. When it's hit with cold water, it begins to change the blood flow in an effort to preserve the brain and not worry about the body as much. They actually did this on several different occasions to be able to try to recreate this, that there's a very old physiological response to cold water in the middle of your face and your forehead above your nose.
Yeah, and, you know, maybe our grandmothers knew that because, you know, if you have a headache, grandma would always say, well, take a wash rag, you know, and partially get, you know, let it get cold and partially with water and partially dry it out and then just let it sit on your forehead a little bit. And, you know, your headache goes away. You usually end up going to sleep, too.
Blood flow. Yeah, feeling comfortable. All right, here's a question that just came in asking, is there any evidence Wi-Fi, 5G towers, Wi-Fi routers, anything like that interferes and causes insomnia?
Not usually, because the drop-off rate of electromagnetic radiation is so abrupt. You know, like lots of people thought if they had an electrical tower outside their house, you know, 15 feet away, that it might cause some problems, not just with insomnia, but various health problems. But it's never really been proven. And then if you measure the magnetic field, it's usually dropped off before it gets to the house.
More people I've talked to talk about pills and using pills. And then here's the thing. We've come out with pills stronger and stronger and stronger, and the more I hear people taking certain type of these pills, especially there's one brand in particular that really, what, it starts with an A, Dr. Brown?
Yeah.
Gosh, I can't remember the name.
Yeah. Oh, I thought you were just not saying it because of the brand.
Well, there's
yeah.
probably that too, but it starts, we'll just leave it at that. But, and yeah. then they say, but the problem is I do very weird things sometimes in my sleep, sometimes the next day, and I don't feel good the next day. They're so desperate to take the pill to get them asleep that it causes a bad day the next day. And I hear this a lot. I hear this a lot in particular from women.
Right. And it does appear that we have an insomnia complaint when about 15% or more of our sleep time or when we're in bed is spent while we're awake. In other words, if your sleep efficiency is less than 85%, you tend to have a complaint.
So Ambien, somebody just, yeah, that's the one we were talking about.
Yeah, I wasn't sure we should say it. Yeah, I didn't know, but that has been, but a lot of sleeping pills have been associated with unusual sleep behaviors or sleepwalking or sleep eating. It's not just that medication.
Yeah, and then we start to double up, and you think if one's good, two must be better, and on the list goes. So what's your advice going forward during this time? And let's take a look at somebody who's questioning their future and their money and every single decision they've made over the last 40 years whenever they're laying in bed and can't seem to get to sleep. If you were going to give some just general guidance, and because here's something you and I both know, Dr. Brown, what we're surrounded with and faced with in the media and a lot of other sources, social media and the like, is it's anxiety driven. And if you weren't anxiety driven about it and weren't upset about it, there's probably something wrong with you. But what is your advice for people who find themselves in this rock and a hard place?
Well, sometimes, you know, mindfulness meditation has been shown to be a little bit helpful, you know, like if you can't stop your thoughts and you're worried and stuff like that, you know, you can just, one meditation is just focus on your breathing. What I like about it is it's real simple. You focus on your breathing and then eventually your mind will drift. Then when you catch yourself drifting, you focus on your breathing again. And then that might happen once or twice or thrice, and then the next time you drift off, you're asleep.
Yeah, you've got to manage yourself. Although, I got to tell you, there's two things I in particular, because I'll lay there and do the math because I get up so early. Oh, I get 2 hours and 18 minutes, 2 hours and 11 minutes, 1 hour and 15, all right? You do the math all right. So turning the alarm clock where you can't see the clock. Dark, right? Big thing here.
Right.
But I got to tell you, the most success I've had, and I did it last night because I couldn't sleep, I got back up, ate an ice cream sandwich, watched 10, 15 minutes of the tube, went right back to bed. That works for me.
Yeah, you sort of use stimulus control there, and then who knows, the ice cream could have had a little tryptophan in it, which may have helped you. So,
oh, that's right.
That's not a, except for one's waistline, that's not a bad strategy.
Yeah, it was. I used a small ice cream sandwich. I'm glad you mentioned that. And yeah, and it worked, but you know, because it's weird because this is going to sound weird. I'll apologize in advance. Who is at 1:30 in the morning having the debate whether they should get up and go to the bathroom or just stay and wait it out until it's time to get up? I cannot tell you how many people, when I was mentioning you were joining us, started reaching me saying, should I get up or should I just hold out and wait? I mean, I hear this all the time, and a lot since you were invited on.
Yeah, that is tricky, and it looks like older men in particular, you know, nocturia are having to urinate more than once during the night. It becomes a significant disruptor of sleep, even if prostate is not in that bad a condition. It seems to still happen.
Yeah.
Whereas women don't seem to get that as much. But my strategy has always been, hey, if you think you have to go, go.
Yeah.
You know?
Don't tell it. Since I knew you were coming on, I experimented with myself, and I turned out that it doesn't matter which one. I don't get a positive outcome. Whether I get up or stay in bed, I don't get a positive outcome either way. So I think there's something behind that. Here's a question
came in. I would think it might be a neutral effect, yeah.
I got a question just come in. How about marijuana and CDB? How do they affect sleep in the long term? Just came in on a question.
Well, the long term is hard to say. You know, in the short term, marijuana, of course, can help people go to sleep, depending on which variety, I understand. Some excite you, and so they're not good ones. But I don't know enough about it to know which brand to recommend. But some earlier studies, you know, with chronic marijuana use have shown some increased alpha rhythm in the brain when the brain should be more relaxed. So we're not sure about long-term effects of that. And then the CBD oil hasn't been studied in that regard, but it does look like, and I listened to the show the other day with David Lawler. It was very interesting. But the actual CBD effect does seem to enhance sleep, but I don't think it's a real big effect. From what I hear,
my understanding, and this is anecdotal from people I've spoke to who have used it, it's not so much the assistance in sleeping, it's that they can sleep better because they don't have the pain that they were experiencing, so they can get a night's sleep. In particular, talk to people who have rotator cuff damage, things like that.
Okay.
That makes more sense.
I was kind of answering for those people that don't have pain, I guess. Just have chronic insomnia,
Yeah. I talked to a guy, a friend of mine from the Illinois Department of Transportation. He looked me straight in the eyes, and he said, Tom, if I could take my arms off at the shoulder and put them beside my bed, I might be able to get a decent night's sleep. And that always struck how serious he was. I just want to take my arms off. I want to take them off at the shoulder.
That's the old comedian kind of thing. The guy would stick his arms to like a Velcro to the wall.
Yeah. That's right.
No kidding. There's a guy. It might have been Stephen Wright that did that routine.
Right.
You know, the really flat guy. But I guess he's just feeling pain when he sleeps on the shoulder. And if you've got a bad shoulder, and if you've got two bad shoulders, and you've got a bad back, how are you going to sleep? You know, it is a significant problem.
You know,
a little bit out of my field because I don't treat pain, but I can certainly appreciate that. I do occasionally get people that are referred to me, and the only reason they seem to have insomnia is their pain.
Right. Dr. Brown and I were talking earlier week on the phone about the upcoming show today, and we'd been talking about something, a study that had been, by the way, on CDB oil, or excuse me, marijuana consumption and sleep. I did find an interesting article and research done by the University of Pennsylvania that they say they had some of the widest research done on the strains of marijuana that best help induce sleep from the University of Pennsylvania. I thought it was an interesting study. But Dr. Brown and I were talking about another subject of doing things to your body that cause a different outlook in life. We were talking University Journal of Neurology, this study where if you smile, your brain begins to react as though you're happy, that physiological response. Now, they put a pencil in the mouths of their subjects to induce the muscle structure that's smiling, and said the brain begins to produce the endorphins like you're happy, that if you fake it, you can make it. Is there something like this you think that you could help induce sleep? Because I think curling up in the fetal position would seem stressful, but it's not. It's a natural, since we're an infant, it's a safe posture, I think, for many people, depending on their weight. Right. Is there a similar?
That could become a potential treatment because, you could stop and think to yourself, well, I'm thinking these sad, scary thoughts. Do I really need to be thinking them? And then you could fake the smile and get maybe the benefits of the endorphins, and I think it raises dopamine as well, and it may even raise a little bit of serotonin, according to some studies. So it could become a treatment for particularly initial insomnia.
Right. I'm trying to push one of my crazy, wacky theories on the doc. Hey, now here's another question.
Good. And then, of course, your hand clench idea is very useful, too, to the public, because Tom had noticed about a year or two ago that if your hand is kind of clenched, you're sort of anxious and you're probably not going to go to be able to go to sleep. And then if you unclench your hand and just kind of relax it, that sort of has an effect on your anxiety and you can go to sleep in some cases. So obviously it's not that simple for everybody, but ever since Tom came up with this idea, I had used that myself, and it tended to work.
Well, it works for me, and I'm hoping it works for other people. I got one question that's come in. It's very serious, Dr. Brown. One more question for Dr. Brown. How do you deal with sleep paralysis? I've had this horrible condition since I was a child. I know what this is. I know you do, too, and it is horrifying.
Well, the treatments usually suggested first of all, I should say there's sleep paralysis associated with narcolepsy, in which you're very sleepy. And then there's sleep paralysis that sort of runs in families and is independent of narcolepsy. And sleep paralysis is a condition where you think you're awake, at least at first, but you're actually in rapid eye movement sleep. And because of the decreased muscle tone that goes with rapid eye movement sleep, you can't move. And some people have even speculated that the alien abduction phenomenon might be a sleep paralysis thing, because they always tell the story of not being able to move, and then there's all these aliens standing around you,
Right.
And what can go with it sometimes is what they call hypnagogic hallucinations, which are just sleep-induced hallucinations. They're not true hallucinations. But you may have one or the other or both. But antidepressants have been the general treatment on that, but it hasn't been well studied. I did a review with a group of other doctors at the American Academy of Sleep Medicine about 10 years ago about treatments for that symptom, and really all we really know is that low doses of some of the antidepressants seem to help it.
Yeah.
But I have talked to people that have just been plagued by it all their lives, and they have to kind of work around it in various ways.
You think you're awake, you can't get up and you can't move, and you see the room too, but you're asleep. It's a really interesting phenomenon, and I've experienced it a couple of times and did not care for it. Dr. Terry Brown.
A lot of people would probably have it at least once or twice in their life.